by Brian Haggerty, a criminal lawyer from David Gray's in Newcastle on BBC Newcastle Radio for the North East. Brian, thanks so much for coming in so early on such a cold day this morning. It is a very, very difficult subject, this. Is rehabilitation the key, or is it throwing away the key?
Well, I think you'd have to say that the only safe decision to take if you're thinking about parole and early release is to not release people. It's not a situation that it doesn't involve risks. So it's inevitably going to be the case that if you have to take a decision about whether someone continues to pose a risk, that sometimes people will get it wrong and people will be released early and they'll go on to commit further offences. And I think that's often why you hear people advocating for the lock them up, throw away the key type sentencing practice. But in reality, the probation service are there to assess risk and to put in place conditions which minimise the risks that prisoners which are to be released into society pose.
But in this situation, though, clearly people have lost their lives. So that was a huge risk to take, a risk that wasn't worth taking.
Well, I think on this occasion he was subject to automatic release, so the parole board didn't play any role in determining what risk he posed. Another argument is about the probation service and what role they have to play, because whilst in prison, hopefully he would have been subject to de-radicalisation programmes in the hope of minimising his risk for the whole of society. And the probation service have undergone a very tough time of late. They have been subjected to what I think would be universally agreed to be a disastrous privatisation. Resources are scant. I think there has been much complaint about the amount of rehabilitation that goes on in prisons.
I mean, there were reports from his lawyer saying that he had asked, there was a letter written that he had asked for help to be de-radicalised.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this, and had he always had this plan, if it had always been in his mind to do to dot the I's and cross the T's and mislead everybody into thinking that he was safe to be released, it's very doubtful he would have asked for a programme like that. And one would hope that people inside prison who are not just terrorism offenders, but also people who've committed sexual or violent offences, are helped so that the rest of society, the risk to the rest of society is minimised when these people are released.
Brian, does the law adapt or change or manoeuvre depending on the change in habits of terrorism? Because, you know, terrorism now is quite different to the terrorism I remember from, say, the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Does the law adapt or change or reflect in time quick enough, do you think?
There is the power in sentencing to have somebody being declared as being dangerous, which gives the parole board a far greater say in when people are released, and they would then have the opportunity of assessing risk and then approving somebody for release into society. And I think in this case, this terrorist, Mr. Khan, was first off deemed to be dangerous by the sentencing judge. There was an appeal to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal overturned that and imposed a sentence which meant that he would be released automatically at the halfway point. So these, you know, there are sentences in place which can assess risk. Who knows what would have happened and whether the outcome would have been different had the original sentence remained in place.
I'm Brian Haggerty, a criminal lawyer from David Gray's in Newcastle. Just on, I thought we'd get quite a few texts like that, Brian, but on, you know, just punish people as hard as possible, keep them in prison for as long as possible. What is the situation in our prisons at the minute? I mean, I'm hearing quite a lot of response to this.
Well, prisons are very full. As a society, we lock up a very high percentage of the population. I think it's second only to the United States. So there are a lot of people in jail already. Whether you think the answer is sending more people to jail, I think is very questionable. I think a lot of research indicates that jail just doesn't work, and people who go to jail are generally more likely to commit more offences when they do come out.
Well, you mentioned America there. That's an example where, you know, they have mass shootings. It's not a strange thing to hear that in the news anymore, but they put a lot of people in prison.
Yeah.
They do. You could argue.
Yeah, it's a vast number. Yeah.
But presumably it costs a lot of money to rehabilitate.
Well, it also costs a lot of money to investigate crime. If you think of a serious recidivist who's in and out of trouble all of their life, there's a lot of money then expended in terms of police investigations, imprisonment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People who are constantly on this cycle of committing offences, being caught, being sent to prison, would be very expensive people for society.
And the parole system, what kind of shape is that in this country? And from what you hear from the people you know in that industry?
Well, I think the parole board have got a very difficult job because, you know, we're just, although this wasn't a parole board decision, they inevitably have to assess people who have done often terrible things. And, you know, all you will ever hear is if they get it wrong. And if somebody has been released and gone on to commit a further offence, then you'll hear howls of protest about how this person was ever released. But somebody has to make that determination. Somebody has to make that assessment if there is to be some sort of release provisions. The only other alternative being to lock people up for very, very extended periods of time.
Do you see rehabilitation success stories very often in your line of work?
Not really, because I see them when they're arrested and going through the criminal justice procedure. But you know,
do you hear about them?
Yeah, you do, and you see people in and around, and you know, it's a combination of age. You know, there are many different drivers to criminal offending. Much has been made of late about the number of products of the care system who are in the criminal justice system. And there are also issues around addiction, homelessness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's quite often the case that, assistance can be given to people to overcome those addiction issues, which will make them far less likely to commit further offences.
I did interview Sir John Timpson once, who they employ a lot of ex-criminals very successfully. Yes. It's unbelievable how, you know, the re-offending rate is very high, but from the people he employs, I think he said it was less than 4%. It's incredible. But he said it's because they treat them right, they treat them like human beings, and they sort of trust them. Mm-hmm. I remember when he started doing this, I think it was the Sun's headline was Cons Cut Keys. So there is still suspicion there and worries there. Okay, Brian, thank you very much for coming into BBC Newcastle Radio for the North East.